You're listening to an episode of the Life Equals Choices, Choices Equal Life podcast with your host, Kim Oliver.
This is Kim, and welcome to the 197th episode of Life Equals Choices, Choices Equal Life. If you like today's episode, be sure to leave me a review wherever you listen to your podcasts and share with your friends on social media. Just don't forget to tag me at Oliver International. Today, we'll be continuing our conversation on leadership as I share with you my process for creating relationship influence. I will be speaking about applying William Glasser's conditions of quality that he writes about in The Choice Theory Manager in the work environment. However, these tips also work for teachers in the classroom, counselors who work with non-voluntary clients, and parents dealing with children who might be less than cooperative. If you'd like to download a copy of this tool for free, look for the URL in my show notes below. Glasser writes about three conditions of quality in the workplace. He talks about first creating a need-satisfying environment. The second one is explaining the usefulness of what you're asking your people to do. And the third one is self-evaluation. My checklist goes through each of these, and I'll describe it for you here. The first need we want to look at is safety and security. Do your people feel safe at work and with you? Do they know that you care about them? Do your people have good relationships with their coworkers? Are your people connected to upper management in a positive way? Do they understand their role in the mission and vision of the company, agency, or group? Do your people know that they're important to you and to the job? This goes to the second need, which I call significance. Glasser called it power, but I much prefer significance mainly because people today don't like to admit that they have a high need for power. Power has come to be seen as the bully or the control freak. And nobody wants to be either of those things. But if you ask people if they want to make a difference, if they want to leave an impact, if they want to be competent at what they do, that's all significance. And it's the same thing as what Glasser called power. First thing under that is, do they know that they're important to the job and to you? Do they feel listened to and respected? The next need is freedom. Do your people know that they have choices in how the job gets done? Leaders define the what, workers define the how. Are your people free to engage their creativity? And do your people have the proper amount of independence at work? I define proper amount as, do they have as much independence as they can responsibly manage? The next need is the need for joy. Are your people having any fun, relaxation, and/or useful learning or training at work? The next thing is usefulness. Do your people sufficiently understand the usefulness of what they're being asked to do? So often we just tell people what we want them to do and think that the usefulness is obvious. Just because we know what's useful and we know how it connects does not mean that our people do. Every time I ask the question in a training, has anyone here ever been asked to do something at work that made no sense, or am I the only one? I'm never the only one. And almost always, every hand in the room goes up. People are always being asked to do things that don't make sense to them. That doesn't mean that they don't make sense. It just means that the people who understand the usefulness haven't taken the time to explain it to the people who are doing the job. You want to make sure that people are being told the why of what they're being asked to do. And on top of that, it isn't just a why that serves the company or serves the manager or the leader. It should be a why that also serves them. So that acronym, WIIFM, is something that leaders need to be able to articulate to their people. If you can't tell your people what's in it for them in the things that they're being asked to do, then don't expect full compliance from all your people. People with an unmet significance need won't do it. People with a high freedom need probably won't do it. But of course, your love and belonging, your joy people, your survival, safety and security people, they will try to do it to the best of their ability because they're not trying to get hurt for doing it wrong. They want to please you, or they don't want anything that's going to interfere with joy. So they'll do it to the best of their ability. But how well can you do things when you don't understand the purpose behind them? So help your people understand what's in it for them. Now, the last thing is about self-evaluation. There are several things involved in self-evaluation. Sometimes people think self-evaluation means that the leader doesn't get to weigh in. All they get to do is ask their people, well, what kind of work do you think you're doing? And of course, people are going to say, I'm doing great. That's not what I call self-evaluation. That's evaluating in a vacuum, and that hardly ever yields any kind of meaningful results. What you want to do is first create what quality looks like with standards of clearly identified behavior that you want to see. And it's not just you. You will need to include the people who are also doing that work. So before an evaluation, I like to gather the people together who do that job and say, okay, let's look at what are the traits, qualities, characteristics, and behaviors of people who are really good blanks, and insert in the blank the job description of what they're doing. In a perfect world, the job description would have all of these things listed, but we know that that's usually not the way job descriptions are written. So we want to talk to our people to make sure that they understand what makes a good blank. You're getting the information from them, and you also get to weigh in as the manager, the boss, the leader. You get to say the things that they may not see as important. And when you do, remember, number two, to explain the usefulness of this. I do a lot of work in nonprofits, and I have people, case managers, counselors, social workers, who are fantastic at their job as it relates to working with other people. That's what they do well. That's why they got into this work, is because they're good with people. But we also expect that our helping professionals are also going to complete reports, and they're going to keep their paperwork up to date. It's incredibly rare to find a good people person that also keeps their paperwork up to date. When you find one, don't ever let them get away, because it's a rare thing that you find someone on top of their paperwork that also does excellent relationship building and good therapeutic work with their clients. Most of the time, we're hiring people and expecting them to be paper people, and that just never works out very well. In addition, when you ask a person who's a human services worker, what makes a good human services worker, whatever their exact title is, and they're going to talk about the relationships they build, the progress that they make with clients, the way they interact with important people in that client's world, that's what they do great. They're not going to tell you, we probably should also evaluate paperwork. It's not that they're trying to hide that. It's that they just don't think about it because that's not something that's important to them. So you, as the person in charge, you need to bring that into the mix, and you need to say, it's also important for human services professionals to be up to date with their paperwork. Why is this important? The easy answer is it's regulations. And when you violate regulations and you're a licensed organization, you can get cited. And with enough citations, you may be put on probation as a service provider, or you may even be shut down with enough violations. So if your people want to maintain employment at their particular place of employment, they need to keep their paperwork up to date. The reason that really got me doing my paperwork reasonably on time was because I thought about the children that I was serving. And I realized that the kids I worked with in foster care were often moved around a lot in their young lives, from home to home to home to home to home sometimes. And when they turned 18, they may want to know more about their history. And they might come to our agency looking for their records. And I wanted to be able to maintain a record that was complete, that I was proud of, that would inform these kids when they became adults about what their younger years were like. That became my burning mission in getting my paperwork done on time. So I could answer my own question, what is the usefulness of doing paperwork? Now, there's one other thing that's important in this conditions of quality that I didn't really emphasize. The first one is creating a need-satisfying environment. When we create a need-satisfying environment, we are going to build positive relationships with the people whose needs we're enabling to be met. We are not meeting their needs for them. We can't do that. We can only create a place and a space where our people could get their needs met if they chose to. If my connection need has me asking my employees if they want to go out to lunch on Fridays, then the people who want to connect in that way will join me. People who prefer their alone time may decide, no thanks, I'm going to stay in and work at my desk through lunch, or I brought something from home, I'm not really looking to go out for lunch. And that's fine, but the opportunity for connection is there. So you as the manager are creating opportunities for people to feel safe at work, for people to feel important at work, that's the significance need, for people to have freedom at work, for people to have joy at work, and for people to be connected at work. When you create those opportunities as the manager, it's up to your people to actually engage with them and get their needs met there. At the same time, it's equally important that you are getting your needs met at work. If your needs aren't being met, it's going to be very difficult for you to be the kind of leader that you want to be. When we're depleted, when our needs are compromised, it makes it very hard for us to be reasonable with the people around us. It's equally important for you to get your needs met as it is for your people to have their needs met. It's not their job to create an environment for you to get your needs met. You have to also do that at the same time that you're creating opportunities for them to get theirs met. That's a tall order when you're trying to build relational influence. But I have learned that relationship is the root of all influence. If you want to influence your people to buy into your agenda as the company leader, you're going to need to have some relational influence. People are not going to do it just because you said so if they don't like you and respect you. You're looking to form a professional, friendly, respectful relationship. When people engage with you at that level and you don't have the what's in it for me to explain the usefulness, sometimes it'll be enough that you just asked and they're going to comply because they want to help make your life a little bit easier. They're not trying to work against you. So people will say to me, but I don't have time to do all these things. And I would respond with, you don't have time not to do these things. Because without the relational influence, you're fighting an uphill battle. You're trying to get people to buy into your agenda, and they don't even like you. They don't even care what your agenda actually is. They're just there to get a paycheck. creating that relationship influence is going to make your job so much easier on the back end. Yes, you need to put in some time on the front end, but it makes the challenging times, the periods of stress, the periods of transition, the periods of change much easier to navigate when you have that relationship influence. If you would like to get a copy of this tool that I use, I'm going to have it available as a free download in the show notes. Just look for the URL and click on that, and you'll be able to download this tool. Of course, I'm going to ask you for your email, but I promise I do not send a lot of salesy emails, so you don't have to worry about that. I hope you enjoyed today's podcast, and remember to leave a review and share with your connections on social media. I also hope you'll join me next week when we'll be continuing the conversation on leadership with Judy Whalen, who will be addressing the entrepreneurial mindset. I'm looking forward to it. Talk with you then.
This has been another thought-provoking episode of Life Equals Choices, Choices Equal Life. To listen to past episodes, please visit our website at lifeequalschoices.com or listen wherever you download your podcast. And don't forget, remember to subscribe.